Incredible musical thing called. You can always count on me. You can count on me. You know I'll always be your soldier.
Doing my best.
With you I wanna live. We have a house and a family. With some little kids.
I'm at the borderline of my faith. I'm in the hinterland of my devotion.
Love and devotion.
In the front line of this battle of mine. But I'm still alive.
Even in the enemy line.
This is CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
Technically, I'm not even really supposed to be here right now. So fuck it. Might as well make the most of it.
Yeah! Feels good! Woo! Guess I'm lucky. Some of us don't get a second chance. But I ain't blowing this one. Nah, man. Shit, I feel like I can do anything now.
Catch lightning in the bottle, set fire to water, coming out the nozzle on the fire hose, fire and swatter.
Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella man.
Snaps an hourglass, grab the sand, take his hands and couple, spin around to freeze the clock, take the hands of time and couple.
Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella man.
There's a storm coming that the weatherman couldn't predict. I start to bug prick, you better flee cause I get ticked. It's a wrap, I was down when I was down, I was kicked. I got up, I'm back to punch you to the ground. Your trick, it's a trap. Fuck my ass, CD that sits in my trash. I'll be goddamn if another rapper gets in my ass. I hit the gas and I spit every rap as if it's my last. You can die in the blink of an eye. So pat your eyelashes and keep winking and blowing kisses cause you're flirting with death. I'm destroying your livelihood, I ain't just hurting your rap. I catch a flow and get going, the remorse I'm sowing they slowing for knowing there's nothing you can do about it. Zeroing on my target like a marksman, the target is you. I shut your lane down, took your spot, parked in a two. Arsenic flow, light affluence, saliva, what can you do? Go get your crew to hype you up, stand behind you like woo! That boy's hot enough to melt hell, burn Satan too. Fry his ass and put his asses back together with glue. So you can hate him, he don't blame you, frankly he would too. This game could ill afford to lose him, how about you? Now guess who? Here's the clue, he came to the ball in his white beater, lost his Nike shoe. It's in your ass, he's in your ass, he's all up in your psyche too. Now, what's his name?
Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella, Cinderella man, Cinderella man. Hey, hey.
If I had a time machine, I'd be
Cinderella man, Cinderella man, Cinderella man.
Cinderella Man, Cinderella Man.
Cinderella Man, Cinderella Shady Dane, came to wrap the game up in cellophane. Raised hell from hell he came, but didn't come to bore you with the Cinderella story, nor did he come to do the same. Or can't afford to be a lame-o in this day and age, and at this stage of the game, mediocrity can no longer be allowed to fly. So say bye to the old, H-I to the new, K-Sera, consider it his last hurrah. Irritated are you? How much in your face am I? And ain't shit you can do but fear it. Proof is here in spirit, and I'm a spitting image. I mirror it when I stand near it. You pussy lyric, I couldn't hear it. Who forms pyramids and wraps circles around square lyricists? Who?
Hey.
Here's a clue.
Hey.
He came to the ball in his white beater, lost his Nike shoe. It's in your ass.
Hey.
He's in your ass. He's all up in your psyche too.
Hey.
Now, what's his name?
Cinderella Man. Cinderella Man.
Good morning, CKLN listeners. It is Monday, July 26, 2010. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening Morning Show with your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna. Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays here on CKLN, 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947, where we don't back down. We don't back down here at CKLN. We've been doing this for a minute now, and by a minute now, I mean 25 years. That's how modest we are. When we mean 25 years, we say a minute, and when we're around for a millennia, we'll say, yeah, we've been doing this for a little bit. Yeah, things are going good. I'm ready for combat, man. And what are we talking about today for combat? Well, here on this CKLN show, as many of you know who do listen to the show, I do try and break down the New World Order, and that is the system of globalization, super rich, evil, powerful people who want to degrade, dehumanize, impoverish, rob, and murder us. And, well... And I won't back down, and none of us should back down, but what does that mean? What does backing down mean? Well, you know, everybody thinks that their opinions are theirs, but we're not exactly sure many of the times where we get those opinions from. And then when we defend those opinions, they become part of our identity, and then we perpetuate and defend those opinions, and then all of a sudden we're defending, our actions as part of a larger agenda. So. In a nutshell, for those who don't know about the New World Order, look into the work of Alex Jones, the film Endgame. It takes you through the last 200 years of history. Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement. Takes you through the way just oligarchs have always thought. As Jones says, and as Jones quotes Webster, Griffin, Tarpley say, these people are like plants. It's like a tropism, where plants just do what they do. They grow towards the sun, or they whatever. You know, and oligarchs, the same thing. They always try and fool people into working for them, and then tax the hell out of them, and then once those people have helped you conquer or develop land, they try and take it from you. And so in this globalized system that's currently happening worldwide right now, I've got the cover of the 24 today because this is hugely important. I'm talking about international geopolitics, super rich people working together in a giant conspiratorial cabal to steal everything from the people of the earth. And what am I looking at? What am I looking at on the cover of today's 24? She's got game. Toronto Raptors dance pack hopeful Charlene, 28, shows off her dance moves during auditions at the Air Canada Centre on Sunday. And her hair is flying. She's looking all Cousin Itty from the old TV show, wearing a tiny little blue top. Her midriff is exposed, and she is working her heart out to dance her ass off. And, yeah, what does this mean? Well, look, we used to be flipped. You know, it used to be a girl, you know, would get some credit for being able to get guys without having to show it all off. And guys, you know, used to be able to get credit for getting girls without having a lot of money. Those other two ways were, it was pretty obvious that you could get a guy if you showed everything. It's pretty obvious that if you were a guy, you could get, you know, girls if you threw around your money. And so it wasn't seen as anything special. But these days, well, and so why do I bring this up? What is the point of me picking on this beautiful young lady who just dreams of being a dancer? Well, I was surfing the internets on the weekend. I was taking a look at some of the pop culture things, trying to figure out, you know, what can we navigate? What ideas can navigate this culture? You know, what can resonate with the most people? You know, not just conspiracy theorists, you know, bouncing, you know, HARP technology and Nikola Tesla and Masonic, Zionist, reptilian, lizard, alien, Illuminati, you know, stuff off people who might listen, but then have absolutely nowhere to go with it and absolutely nothing to do with it, you know, and have no way of repeating it. So I'm trying to think here, what works? What are the big ideas, you know, that resonate with us? What are the things we already care about? What can we use? What can you tell someone that's you know, part of this whole great big conspiracy that they're actually happy to hear? And you know, I got to say, having done this for a little while right now, and being, you know, kind of in the game for a minute, the things that everybody relates to are things that everybody relates to, and that is how we relate to each other. And I would say that when it comes to this type of information, you got to be cold about what you know. You got to be a stone cold, I get it. You know, you got to say it like it's your name. You got to say it like it's your shirt, like it's your clan, like it's just something you know. And calmly, you don't need to get in someone's face. You don't need to get all nervous about it. But, you know, if I take a look at this picture here on the cover of the 24, and then I look to the right of it, living well, page 20, nutrient-rich foods to keep your energy level up and avoid a sluggish summer. And then what else is here on the cover? Showbiz, Comic-Con wraps up. You can see the world of fantasy that we're in. And I watched some comic book convention stuff on the weekend, going stronger than ever. This happens all the time. The worse we're treated, the more uncertain, the more destabilizing the oligarchs at the top of the world make our lives and our reality, the more we'll seek to play in fantasies they give us. But I'm noticing some of these pictures of these cute bikini girls and so on the internet and whatever yesterday, and I'm testing my own programming. I'm on the UK Daily Mail reading some horrible article about some horrible legal principle, and all of a sudden the right sidebar, there's Caprice or Kim Kardashian or any one of these girls in a bikini. And I'm like, I gotta click and I gotta check that. Why? Because I'm a guy. And I'm raised in this culture, and it's the 21st century, and that's what we've been raised to gravitate towards. And yet, when I see some of these girls, some of these pictures or some of these videos or whatever, you get a second that they break their sort of fake perma smile. And they got the kind of sad, weary eyes of, yeah, really, I am just half naked smiling and showing myself off to strangers all the time and trying to fake like this is like the greatest thing since canned bread when there's a bunch of other chicks here that sort of pretty much look the same and that are, you know, chipping away at my ego just by being hot girls here too. And so, you know, this is a trap for us, a trap for guys, a trap for girls. And then girls do this, and they get all in crazy shape, and then guys just act stupid and are mindlessly tough, and then girls don't respect them, and then think, ah, there's no point, and, you know, I can't find a decent guy. And then guys are like, you know, that's probably true, but, you know, I can, you know, probably still have sex with you because you're selling it that hard. And the girl's like, ah, all right, fine, maybe we'll have sex, but maybe I'll just complain about you later. And the guy's like, deal, you know? So the cultural Cold War, the cultural warfare is the most important thing to beat for our survival. I'm going to take you to a clip from Alan Watts, Cutting Through the Matrix Radio from the 20th of July, where he breaks down the cultural Cold War.
And big powers planned a completely different society for the end of the 20th century. And they started the changes at the beginning of the 1900s and sped it up from there. This has been well documented by various authors, but even some of those in the inside who were all for it and who taught as part of the programs to get the changes going in universities, like Carl Quigley, who was also the historian for the Council on Foreign Relations, as was being one of the main characters to choose Rhodes Scholars for world government, or world governance as they call it now. So there's nothing to me, having read so much and so on over many, many years, to surprise me. The only thing that surprises you is how ignorant people stay, and every generation doesn't know. Back with more after these messages. Hi folks, this is Alan Watt and we're Cutting Through the Matrix. Just talking about how generations don't really pass on information to the next. In fact, that's by design. At one time you would have a grandpa, or maybe even a great-grandpa, and you could ask him questions and talk to him, and he'd tell you things. And people had time in those days to talk, of course, because they didn't sit and watch television for indoctrination purposes. They actually communicated. A strange thing, that communication, isn't it? And they would tell them their family history, too, and what they'd been through themselves and the changes that they saw. And they'd tell you why, because they were far smarter. They knew what was going on. And they knew the con games that were getting pulled over them by politicians and governments. They knew even about the League of Nations and the machinations they were up to and what their long-term goal was, because at one time they printed that stuff in the newspapers. So unfortunately, the big war had to divide the generations, and they certainly were very successful at that, and even trained us again to dump the old folk in homes, which are really like exit homes, I call them, so that they wouldn't communicate. Plus, you had the communists within the U.S. and other countries saying, and teaching actually in school, because a lot of them were communists, no doubt about it, and professors too. Everyone knew the CIA, knew it, everyone knew who was who. But so they were teaching the students, don't believe anybody over the age of 30, and sometimes they brought it down to even younger. So that's what started the rebellion of the youth. It wasn't a spontaneous thing that came from internal conflict at all. It was because they were having indoctrinations and made to feel very unhappy about the nasty previous generation and blamed their parents personally for whatever had happened in the world. So everything literally is managed on a gigantic scale. And again, Lenin said the same thing. You've got to have the educational system completely under wraps to ensure the indoctrination is the right indoctrination for every generation. And you have to have the military sewn up and the police and give them special perks and privileges that the rest of them don't get. And that way you can control any revolution or revolt from below, basically. So, but at the same time as this was going, as I say, it's fascinating to see the techniques that were used to destroy the values and the cultures of the Western world, especially, I'd say, the UK and America. And within America, too, I classified Canada because they were all reading the same stuff, same magazines and all the rest of it. Harper's and all them belonged to the big boys, that's the Milner Group, etc., that became the Royal Institute for International Affairs. They were spearheading their ideology towards the women with the aid of Bernays, and we all know about Bernays, I'm sure if you listen to this show, and how they literally would work on unconscious emotions, desires, and through advertising. They were specialists in this, in fact, and they created, he created, along with the guys who employed him, then the consumer society. But they also altered the culture because it was a cultural war. And Carl Quigley, Professor Carl Quigley, in his own book, Tragedy and Hope, being the historian for the Royal Institute for International Affairs - Council on Foreign Relations, and who was all for the agenda, admits how it was done and how the magazines and the very early movies when Hollywood started up, the very early ones, right away went into action to make women dissatisfied with their lot in life, to make them think they should have it all, to such an extent that I actually knew people in Britain who literally nagged their husbands because they thought they should have all that stuff they saw in these movies, you know, the fictitious movies. They wanted that kind of reality. Well, Carol Quigley actually went into all of that in Tragedy and Hope towards the end of his book, how it was done and how they were made to feel dissatisfied, and how they literally were taught via the movies and novels that were getting churned out all by the same people for the same purpose to nag their husbands into working harder and faster for more money, or else they were gone. And even got the idea of divorce from Hollywood. The whole culture in North America and across good parts of Europe, but definitely Britain, was under attack. And they didn't know it. They didn't know it. The high professors and universities at levels, they knew it. The guys who owned the media, who were all the Royal Institute for International Affairs, they certainly knew it. The culture industry, in other words, they all knew what it was all about and where they wanted to go with it. You find that Quigley also admits that it was the culture industry in the very early ages, right up to 1920, when it was really getting off the ground. They brought in the short skirts and so on. That was the first sign of to try and get women to copy them. They knew that the mass of people, the ordinary people, they copy what they see above them. And so they gave them the stars to emulate and the fashions to go with it and the behavior too, by the way. And it's quite fascinating how it's never ending because they've never let go, have they? The whole thing was to put men in the background and literally reverse the roles of who would be dominant in a home. There was to be no compromise of any kind. It was to be domination, and that turned out to be so. And unfortunately, there's many, many psychiatrists and psychologists today who hear, I'm sure every day, their lives of women who went after careers and who eventually realized that they'd been conned into having it all and treating men really as second-class citizens. And that happened. Men became meek and mild. Hollywood churned out movies about the bad man, especially the bad white man, and the movie Falling Down really was a good one on that. When the guy at the end, when he doesn't realize it, he thought was one of the good guys, done all the right things. He's told by the cop, and he says, "Oh, you mean I'm the bad man? I'm the bad guy? Wow!" So this was an incredible attack, and all media really, and all fiction, is meant to download you, alter your behavior, and have you behaving in a certain way. And if you adopt that posture that you're supposed to adopt, that they're giving you to adopt, you will be treated like dirt, honestly, and walked over, ran over, and you'll be pretty useless to yourself. That was all intentional. We think of warfare as something that's men fighting men across a battlefield and flags going and all that stuff. No, that's only one type of warfare. There's about 99% of other ways that you deal with warfare, and cultural destruction is the main one that you have to do. Destroying the culture, the values that makes the people strong, makes them cohesive, makes them stand up. All the things they'll stand up for must be destroyed. That has been pretty well accomplished. And we're given nothing but terrible, degrading stuff for movies today. It's kill, slaughter, and sex. Sex is with anybody and anything. And that's common fare for your entertainment. Isn't that something else? Common fear. Your children watch it. How do you think they're going to grow up to be? We're bad enough with all our indoctrinations. But this is a deliberate technique of warfare, cultural warfare. You have economic warfare. You have many kinds of warfare that are just as, if not more important in the final battle on the battlefield. And often you don't even need to get to the battlefield because you've already conquered millions of people without their knowledge. That's the beauty of psychological warfare, intergenerationally. Planned, executed, followed right through between the generations. We are watching the end of it today and living through what's left of it. You see, all your leaders for generations of any party that gets up there all belong to the same big club. They're all pre-selected. They're all trained for their mission. And their job is to further destruct that which the previous party had going, to keep it going and for more destruction, always knowing what they had to do. Not one party ever stopped to try and change the monetary system. Not one single party. They will never touch it. You know, there's been different books put out on the money and the banking systems of the central bankings. That was the con game to start with. And even how they took away the ability to, for central banks to even create their own money, and how they farm it out. And you couldn't get it simpler and more easily presented to you than when it's called, Oh Canada, bought and sold, basically. I'll give you the link for this. It's up on Google. It's very good. A young guy did a very good series of interviews with ex-prime ministers of Canada, all members of the CFR, and the guys were in charge of Canada's financial affairs. He brought up all the right questions. He didn't get it all, mind you, but he brought up all the right questions. And you should hear all these characters, the guys who got us into billions of debt, who gave away the Bank of Canada's ability to print their own money themselves and gave it to, you know, Canada's money, most of it is printed in Germany, and one private company prints it in Canada. Then it's given to the banks. Back with more after these messages. Some of the things that have happened over the last 100-odd years to get us to where we are today, and it wasn't happenstance. It took world meetings between the representatives from every country at attendance to come up with all the, well, they actually were told what the plans were and what their parts would be in it. But to get the whole, all these countries on board with the same globalized agenda at the same time. And throughout that period, too, they did away with any gold backing, at least in the banks. You know, they're issuing paper. They put it down to fractional reserve banking. So they only needed a fraction of the gold to cover all the money and all that kind of stuff until they ended up in Canada with none at all. They don't need that. 98, I think it was. They literally says, okay, the banks themselves can just make money out of nothing. And each time you get a loan, they just create the magic numbers and give you a check and put it in your account. That's how money is created. And governments too, rather than borrow from their own Bank of Canada, end up borrowing from all these other private banks abroad with compound interest because they're told to, you see. They know the agenda, but you'll actually hear on this video, Oh Canada, Prime Minister saying that this massive debt is good for us all. You actually hear them saying that. Massive debt, unpayable debt, I mean, it's just slavery, is good for us all. Why? Because they're all members of the Canadian Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, you see. One after another of all parties, far left, far right, and all the rest of it, all things in between, they're all in there because they're all on board in the same club. There's no choice in the matter when it comes to voting. They're pre-selected, as Quigley said, and the plebes just vote for them in. Whoever sounds the best with the most promises is who gets voted in. That's how easy it is. But getting back to the culture and all the rest of it and destroying the culture, destroying the middle class, because it was a war. You must stage a war on the culture of a country you want to destroy. It has been done, has been successful. Look at the mess Britain's in, for instance, and other countries in Europe because of it. and even the statements of Tony Blair saying, I wanted to destroy the culture of Britain forever by literally making sure so many immigrants would come in at the same time, no time to adapt into what was left of the British, therefore they'd keep their own, you see. And what was left of the British culture is just gone in history. It's finished, kaput. So that's how they do it. Back to this article here, the rehash of over years I've watched of rehashes of the middle class being destroyed. It says, why are we witnessing such fundamental change? And the globalism and free trade gets the blame for it here. And it says American workers would eventually have to directly compete for jobs with people on the other side of the world where there's no minimum wage and few regulations. The big global corporations have already benefited by exploiting the third world labor pools over the last several decades, but middle-class American workers have increasingly found things to be very tough. Well, that's putting it mildly. And it goes into the giant sucking sound and so on and so on. It says, the reality is that no matter how smart, how strong, how educated, or how hard working American workers are, they just cannot compete with people who are desperate to put in 10 to 12 hours a day at less than a dollar an hour on the other side of the world. After.
What's happening? What's happening? What's happening, brother? What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? What's happening? 1, 2, 3, 4.
And we're back, CKLN listeners. Again, that was Alan Watt from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. A genius. He speaks about these things in generalities sometimes, like I do. Sometimes he breaks down the specifics. But yeah, talking about the cultural Cold War on our values, on what held us together. Something I was alluding to before the clip, and that was from July 20th, 2010, where he talked about, well, the cultural Cold War and how our politicians are pre-selected. And this, by and large, appears to be true based on the fact that they all basically think the same once they are elected. What does it take to beat this? Well, it takes a sense of purpose. I got to say, it takes a sense of purpose. Every time I've had a sense of purpose, yeah, it's lasted like 5 minutes, but every time I've had a sense of purpose and I've had a girlfriend, she's gotten excited about that. And she's wanted to support, you know, whatever my crazy thing was, whether I want to be, I want to win crazy basketball tournament with my buddies, you know, up at York University, a little 3-on-3 action, or whether I want to learn how to web design, which I never did. Or whether I want to start a business or apply for a job or get in shape or whatever the hell it is. They love to support a guy that's doing something. And the one trump card you have, if you're a man over there and you are in a relationship with a woman, is the fact that you are still going to be counted on to protect her in difficult economic times, in difficult social situations, and so on. And right now, as the genders are being played with through social engineering, and you can see all these programs worldwide, international NGOs, and the onegirl.ca campaign or whatever, and we got to help the Afghanistan women get educated, and this is only for women, and to hell with the guys. That is a plan to attack their cultures. It's not because our governments like women, because if they did, they treat the ones here better. You know, you wouldn't have the United States having like 6 weeks of maternity leave, you know, paid. And then, you know, as soon as your kid's like 6 weeks, a month, 2 months old, you know, stick them in a nursery or daycare and have some stranger attend to them in their most formative and vulnerable years. You know, the Americans, you know, wouldn't do that. They wouldn't bomb countries with depleted uranium that caused birth defects in women who are having children. They just wouldn't do that if they really cared. So what are these attacks? What is the elevation today of women by some of the major institutions? There's nothing against women, and people say, you know, there's two sides to this, and what about the other side? This is just history. This is just the reason these ideas are pushed. And if you support these ideas, if you support the bad ideas, it's the same as supporting the Pink Ribbon campaign to cure breast cancer, which is, of course, being heavily promoted everywhere. because all that does is raise money for big banks and big drug companies like the CIBC, Run for the Cure or whatever, who have no intentions of curing cancer after 50, 60, 70 years of trying, and not trying very hard, because what they actually try to do on the side is they try and suppress natural cures like Rick Simpson's hemp cure for cancer, proud Nova Scotia, now in exile in Spain, because he's afraid to come back to Canada, because even though the media's reported on it, and even though the RCMP knew what he was doing, and the feds knew what he was doing, at times they decide to crack down on people harmlessly growing plants to cure themselves and others of terminal illnesses. So, you know, that happens. Hey, it happens here in Canada, and that's something that we got to pay attention to. And in addition to that, you know, they also suppress cures by Charlotte Gerson, the Gerson therapy, another classic cure that's been proven. And what's the proof on this? They're like, well, is this in a medical journal? Let's get something straight here. Medical journals have co-signed drugs like Vioxx that have been released that have killed people. So they aren't the end-all and be-all. And trust in people, you know, say the 40 people in Nova Scotia who signed sworn affidavits that say, yeah, this cancer cure cured me, helped me. got to take that into consideration here. How people feel, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, traditional Indian medicine, you know, how did they work? I'm going to break a lot of that down tomorrow on a Canceling Cancer in Canada show, assuming I get that put together tonight, because I've been working on that for a while now. I want to do a few more themed shows. But on this theme show, we are talking about the cultural Cold War in part, and the war on the genders and the war on relationships. Because ultimately, unless and until we can relate to each other better, nothing we do is going to work. You know, nothing we say, nothing we get is going to work. We could get, you know, 200 top globalists calling for a new world order in the film Invisible Empire. And individually, we could watch it and go, wow. But if we try and share that with somebody else, if we're already worried about the status of our relationship through the destabilizing and destabilized culture we're in, it'll be hard to threaten that with information that's heavy in a culture that doesn't want to get heavy. So I'm here on the Central Intelligence Agency's website. It's www.cia.gov/library and blah, blah, blah. And it says here, the work of a nation, the center of intelligence. And it says, I'm looking at a book review here. It's called The Cultural Cold War, The CIA and the World of Arts and Letters, Intelligence in Recent Public Literature by Francis Stoner Saunders, New York, The New Press, year 2000, copyright 509 pages. And it says, this is a review by Thomas M. Troy Jr. of the CIA's library. If the Cultural Cold War had been published in the 60s or 70s, it most likely would have caused a sensation and been a bestseller. It would have provoked anguished editorials in major Western newspapers and a barrage of "we told you so" items in the communist-controlled media. Published at the turn of the century, however, the book is something of a curiosity. One, it contains a long cry of moral outrage over the fact that the CIA committed, quote, vast resources to a secret program of cultural propaganda in Western Europe, unquote. And two, at the same time, the author, an independent filmmaker and novelist, has produced a well-written account of a basically unfamiliar story with a cast of many larger-than-life characters who played roles in the Cold War. To oversimplify the historical background, in the late 1940s, Washington did not take for granted that people in Western Europe would support democratic governments and that their states would effectively oppose the Soviet Union and support in the U.S. To help promote democracy and to oppose the Soviet Union and West European communist parties, the CIA supported members of the non-communist left, including many intellectuals. Because the CIA's activities were clandestine, only a few of the beneficiaries were witting of the agency support, although a large number suspected agency involvement. And on and on and on. So it goes right through here, how the agency subsidized European tours of Boston Symphony Orchestra, paid for the filming of Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm, and so on. And yet this came out in 2000 and was not picked up much by the press. What does that tell you? Well, It tells me that the CIA is still running things. And while the author here tries to make light of the fact that, you know, well, the reviewer rather tries to make light of the fact that the author found this shocking, that the CIA was involved this heavily in manipulating our culture. Keep in mind, this is the same organization that a Veterans Today article said should be terminated and destroyed yesterday. This is Veterans Today, the real magazine, for all the evil that they were manifesting on the world in the forms of coups, assassinations, setting up death squads, and so on through the 50s and 60s and 70s and to this day. So the exact same organization that was manipulating our culture in the Western world was also manipulating cultures in the Eastern and Third World by trying to destroy them by putting in fascist governments. But why are we having trouble relating? Well, David Icke and Jeff Brentz from July 12th of this year are going to talk about Orwellian text messaging, newspeak, and mind control. Are we into that? Should we be?
By connecting it to these information constructs that we then read and get affected by in terms of our perceptions, in terms of our thoughts, and we think they're coming from us. But are they? Where are they originating from?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're being affected in many, many different ways on this deep, deep level because, you know, I spent, as you know, Jeff, we've known each other for a long time. I spent a long time investigating and writing about the way this control system plays out in the five-cents world, in banking scams and engineered wars and all these things. And, yes, we need to know this, but that's still the play-out level of this. And the kind of subjects we're talking about tonight, these are the levels that it's all being played out from. And this is where our reality is being manipulated from and being encoded from so that we perceive ourselves and the world in a certain way. And this is what more and more people, not enough and not quick enough from our perception, but more and more people are breaking out from. They are starting to disconnect from, and they're starting, therefore, to see themselves and the world in a completely different way.
Right.
And I do think that part of the reason that this is happening so fast, part of the reason, is that there is a panic going on. I feel that there's a... well, we can talk about it after the break, but almost you turn something on its head. It seems that the control system is in increasingly total control, but I think something else is underlying, which is actually almost the opposite of that.
All right, very good. Back with David in a minute. His book as well. Most of 325 illustrations, 355,000 words. You know, the average teenager has a working vocabulary of about 3,000, maybe 3,000 words, 4,000, that's it. And they don't use most of those most of the time. The way that they text on their cell phones now, they've made up a whole new language of words that aren't spelled like we recognize them. They're little shortcut words, and then they have predictive texting features and software and all that, so they don't have to know how to spell. They can get the first one or two letters right, and the word will appear. We're breeding a world of imbeciles on the one hand, and on the other hand, we have this astounding portal to undreamed of knowledge on the internet. And then somewhere in the middle, we have this collective control mechanism, which is undeniably awesome and quite clearly being planned and groomed to be even more so.
Well, the texting language and all that stuff is very, very significant because it's George Orwell's newspeak and oldspeak. As Orwell pointed out, we not only speak with words and communicate that way, you know, on this level, we actually think with words. And the more that you can take words out of circulation that mean anything, that describe things, in detail, the less you can even think in detail. If people read what Orwell wrote about oldspeak being replaced by newspeak, this meaningless language that says nothing, then you put things like text language together with political correctness and other things like that. Mm-hmm. And you've got exactly what he was talking about. I mean, political correctness is what? It's saying you cannot say this, you cannot use this word. I mean, you know, instead of brainstorming, we have thought showers. I mean, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And if you reach a point eventually, you will not be able even to articulate to yourself in the realm of thought.
Did Orwell, let me ask you a question, David.
What do you think?
Yeah, David, a question on Orwell. Did he go as far as to pronounce back then or intimate what was recently, and I thought profoundly, laid out in an article, which I can't recall pulling up now, I don't know the name of it, but the idea was that the smaller the vocabulary in the mind, the less full and enriching the experience of life is. And you know exactly what that is. Now, did Orwell touch upon that or point to that? You see, these people are just, they're not just dumb, all right? When you're dumb, you don't have facts and data. They're dumb to the extent that they don't have the words in their mental hard drive, and we don't have the words to define things, as David just said. You do not draw from living the fullest and most rich potential there is. And I'm just curious if Orwell talked about that.
Well, if you didn't use those words, was actually talking exactly about that. If you can't articulate your thought, never mind give your views in detail, then by definition, you are disconnecting yourself from massive areas of potential communication and interaction and perception, and therefore you must live a life of incredible limitation in terms of your experience. And, you know, Orwell was pointing out, for instance, was the effect that how do you basically create a revolution, if you like, demanding freedom, if the word freedom, and therefore what that means, does no longer exist? How do you articulate we must be free if the word free, in the sense of that we would accept free, perceived free, how can you create a revolution demanding freedom if the word freedom doesn't exist? You know, articulating ourselves and being able to communicate that way in detail to really get across what we're trying to say and what we're thinking is fundamental to any kind of freedom and any kind of real experience. And by looking at the way we communicate words and then diminishing those words both in number and in what they express in terms of detail, you are dumbing people down in the most fundamental way, far more than the dumbing down of education, which big time is obviously part of this. But once you get to the core of dumbing down the language, the means of communication, then you're really taking people into the realms of phenomenal limitation in terms of not just their communication, but as you rightly say, they're actually their life experience.
They're just right, and so that makes them all the more amenable or vulnerable, does it not? Of course it does, to all the diversions, petty mental diversions that they're showered with all the time, the imbecility on the television, the general imbecility of the average person's lifestyle. I don't mean to put them down, but my goodness, the potential here for achieving on this planet is so enormous, and yet most of these people they don't even know what the word proactive. They're simply reactive.
Yes, and it's the herd-like mentality, and what is a herd? It's a collective mind that acts as one. It's a collective mind that follows the one in front, and this is where you know, we come back to this manipulation of our perception and this manipulation of and creation of sub collective minds.
Ayo, before I start this song, man, I just want to thank everybody for being so patient and bearing with me over these last couple of years while I figure this shit out.
Is anybody up there? It feels like I'm talking to
Uh-oh. We're back, folks. And we're back again. And that again was David Icke on the Jeff Rentz radio show from the 12th of July. That's a clip you can find on YouTube, which I pulled from YouTube and pulled the MP3 of to try and share with you, because David Icke is one of the best in the world at breaking down what's happening. That's David Icke. He's got a couple of views I don't believe in. I don't necessarily believe the people at the top are reptiles. He believes they are. I don't necessarily co-sign the fact that there are many other dimensions around us, although I think it's possible. And I don't necessarily co-sign the fact that we're guaranteed to be coming out of this in some sort of grand conscious awakening. That sounds a bit new agey to me. And so it makes me suspect, you know, where he's coming from in some ways. But nonetheless, that's why you got to think for yourself in this world. You got to think for yourself with respect to what I'm saying. You know, I probably have a few hundred, a few thousand, whatever listeners, and love all of you. Thank you so much for tuning in whenever you do. But I just have one way of saying it, and you may have a totally different way of saying what needs to be said today to who you need to say it to. So how do we beat all this? How do we beat this? Well, it's real, real simple. You know, what is rebellion today? What is true rebellion today? True rebellion would be going against, you know, what we're all pushed to do. And so if you're going to truly rebel and you're going to truly do it well, then people will respect you for that in this culture, because it's still innate. It's still understood. There are people that carve a lane for themselves. If you look at someone like Alex Jones, you know, he works, you know, 10, 15, 18 hours a day sometimes. Clearly produces a ton of material, 4 hours a day of radio, and then 25 documentary films so far, a couple of books, and so on and so forth. And he runs a team of, you know, 15 people, the Infowars.com, PrisonPlanet.com, Infowars.net, and so on family. He's got a wife and three kids. And to the best of my knowledge, in the times that he's discussed it, his wife is very, very supportive, because he's very, very driven. And she knows that he's trying to get success, you know, not just for himself, but for his family, for his friends, for his community, for his city, country, and ultimately for the world. And so that driving push is what, you know, allows her to respect him enough to support him in what he feels he needs to do to take care of this whole New World Order problem. And so that's the strongest piece of advice out there that I can give, is that, you know, get a sense of purpose and get a plan, and then follow that plan, and then the people around you will by and large support you. I know I've experienced this for years myself, having dipped in and out of this game. One of my issues is that, well, and yeah, you know, one of my issues is that it's not, you know, my own personal success, you know, is fine. You know, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity to be put in positions to achieve it, you know, and in different ways. But this whole thing, this whole New World Order problem, is only going to be taken care of if we find the ideas that we're willing to share, if we can tell people things that they're willing to repeat, not things that they find interesting that each of us says, but things that you think they can use in their own lives to tell somebody else to improve their lives, because that's the only way things like this go viral. And the New World Order killed spam. And that's horrible, because, I mean, I used to send out big emails, not just angry screeds like I've seen some people write, where people just sort of, you know, take their anger and frustration out in the world, but carefully and calmly crafted, you know, analysis of the situation and then plans to get out of it, things to share, timely information, you know, things to pay attention to among all the flotsam and jetsam of BS out there that our media shovels at us. So you can do that today, and you can just say sincerely, you know, check it out. And you can do it in modern Twitter speak style, in a little like 8-word email. I wouldn't just send a link, because that's a little too impersonal. You know, a link and maybe a sentence or something, you know, might be better. It's hard for me to tell these days, because I'm trying not to have my own language reduced to the point where I'm unable to speak like I speak or think like I think, just in case we need someone to say stuff or someone to think of stuff that can get us out of this. And I recommend you do the same. Slow down on the text messaging. Slow down on the chatting. Try and find opportunities to write paragraphs as opposed to just broken 8-word emails. I'm noticing the changes because I'm in touch with some of the same or a lot of the same people over the course of the years. I'm noticing everyone switching to signing off with initials and being really, really super brief and too cool for school. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. This is not the way people who treat each other like each other. You know, you should try and make each other laugh. Try and say something interesting. Try and share information and ideas and analysis of each other's lives based on an understanding of the bigger picture that can help each of you improve them. And that's much healthier. And in terms of space, in the giant Koyaanisqatsi or Powakatsi, you know, film that is the streets of Toronto and any other major urban city, personal space is a huge deal. You know, a guy could just plow into another guy on the sidewalk, whatever. I've had guys plow into me. I remember just coming to mind at the Eden Center. I'm opening the door, and this big black dude's just flying through the door. He's 6'4", I'm 5'10", so he's a few inches taller than me. Probably weighs me by about 20 pounds. And just, bam, plows into my right shoulder as he's passing by me. And so I jerk back a little bit. And then I jerk back a little bit. And I take the hit, and then I just break into a smile as the guy keeps going, and I keep going, and that was that. You know, because I didn't think it was personal. I thought it was impersonal and impolite, but I didn't think it was personal, and I didn't think it was going anywhere, so I just shrugged it off and kept going. And you know, it is what it is. That type of thing happens when we're all crowded together like rats. And experiments they've done comparing housing projects to the behavior of rats that are put together in little mazes and squished together. The rats eventually go crazy, stop caring where they crap, stop caring about each other, start turning to cannibalism. And that's what happens when you squish people together. So if a guy plows into another guy, a guy could probably just shrug that off. But if a guy plows into a girl with the same type of, you know, hockey body check intensity, then, you know, and it's always possible when we're all, you know, sort of almost bouncing off each other, you know, fighting for every little inch of space before we go to our tiny condos and retreat from the world here in Toronto, then that girl could be shaken up for weeks. Same with a kid, and same with, you know, frankly, same with not just a kid, but same with, you know, an old person. You know, anybody that's in a position of vulnerability. I know old people, I got uncles that are afraid to come downtown because they're afraid they'll get mugged. They're afraid of this and that. And so there are people out there that are crippled by fear on a daily basis. And in these large, you know, urban population centers where we're being crowded and squished together, having a bit more respect for each other's personal space in this environment is not a bad idea, especially when we're all more vulnerable. You know, when we're all more insecure, when our insecurities are being fed by a losing Leafs team for 40 years, by, you know, the UN telling us we're the greatest country and blowing smoke up our shiny butts, and by our governments being able to say things like, oh, the G20 will make us a star on the world stage, and the world will be the world's eyes will be on us, and then people call into this show and say, but the world's eyes are on Toronto. No, they weren't. They were watching the World Cup soccer. You know, you can't. We can't get insecure enough to let the government throwing us a bone in terms of them saying everyone will like us, when we weren't even paying attention to that. It's not like we really paid attention to the world paying attention to us. You know, we don't double check these things. And so we have to eliminate some of the fear in our culture by treating each other a little better, and men have to take responsibility for this. Because if men don't man up for this, it's not getting done. You know, you got to think in the same thing. If this was, you know, 5,000 years ago in some village in Africa or Asia or wherever, and it was being attacked by, and they knew it was, you know, going to be attacked by another tribe, a warring, conquering band of nomads, you know, who were hell-bent on taking all their stuff and possibly killing a bunch of them. If the guys just sat there and went, yeah. No, I saw that on the internet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're taking our stuff. Oh, boy, it's getting bad now. And that villages would have been killed, you know, because the women and the children and the old people, they're not going to do it. That's not it. No matter how empowered you feel, they're not going to do it. It's not part of our character for the last few thousand years. Some of them will. Some of them are doing it now and doing it great. But by and large, in terms of people standing up for where they live, guys have to take a bit more responsibility on the micro level in terms of giving women personal space, old people, children. Don't let them act crazy. Don't let them push you into traffic. but you know, you can definitely, you know, recognize that you're a bit of a threat to them just by virtue of your size and your potential to use that size in a not nice way. So letting them know that you're just not that guy who's going to do that stuff ain't a bad idea. And having them respond, you know, will make you feel better. And I bring this up because this is something you can pass on. It says here, leaked files expose ugly war in Afghanistan. Leaked reports from 2004-2009 suggest U.S. military has played down the grim side of the Afghan war. 90,000 U.S. military records leaked. This is from thestar.com here. Khmer Rouge chief jailer gets 35 years. Rosie DiMaggio, how I became a money launderer. Talking about Zimbabwe. All sorts of craziness out there that you can find out. But, you know, what can you use? So let's start being a bit more practical. And I'm going to let you know what you can use before the People's DJ, David James, takes you for a four-hour jazz experience you will not forget. If everybody in Canada watched the Obama deception and Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, we'd all be caught up in what that 2 years of corporate hype was about, because we like to party as much as anybody, so we were partying for Obama here in Canada. Thanks to our media, you know, celebrating and selling us the party that has now obviously turned into a nightmare, as people don't know what to think anymore. You know, after investing so much hope in the guy that cornered the market on hope and then, you know, sold us a rope to hang ourselves with. And then Endgame, talking about the eugenics and talking about the reason that so many things kill us. Great article. So Infowars.com is a great place to find out more about all these things, including internet censorship and a ton of people fighting back. If you want to get inspired by what people are doing, Infowars.com is a great place to do that. Naturalnews.com has an amazing natural news TV special that I'll play tomorrow, about 8 minutes, talking about all the cosmetics in your home and ones that you use that are full of lead and mercury and other toxins that are bad for you that reduce your intelligence. Don't get stupid, because as Jeff Rentz and David Icke said, if you get stupid, it'll make it tougher for you to think about how much you're enjoying life and think of ways to be happy and think of ways to relate to people and think of ways to feel good about yourself. And so do not ruin your ability to think. Go to naturalnews.com and share it with everybody. And share that article. Because at the end of the day, if you make a couple of smart choices, you could stay smarter for it. And that could come in handy as things get a bit more unstable here 10 years into the 21st century. So naturalnews.com is great. Cuttingthroughthematrix.com is great. Trendsresearch.com is great. Locally, pressfortruth.ca is great. Conspiracyculture.com is great. A couple of programming notes tonight. I'll be on American Freedom Radio from 6 to 7 p.m. with the Truther Girls. You can tune into AmericanFreedomRadio.com for that, or go to the TrutherGirls.com website. And then tonight from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., my interview show, I'll have guest Professor Timothy Ball, veteran 30-year climate scientist, to break down global warming, climate change, what the hell all that's about, how long he's seen that being BS, and what we can really do if we really care about the environment and don't just care about ourselves. Don't be afraid to challenge what's out there. Don't just go along with all the corporate media BS to feel good, because at the end of the day, it is designed to enslave us, and that's what a lot of the green movement's about. I've left them alone for the last couple of weeks, pretty much since the G20, and so I got to start going at them again tonight. CKLN's Word of Mouth Monday, 7 to 8. You can catch me interviewing Professor Timothy Ball from friendsofscience.org. And next Monday, Patrick from conspiracycultures.com. Check out conspiracyculture.org or at conspiracyculture.com or the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles. Grab some DVDs, burn them, pass some flyers, share some information, but best of all, share some analysis about relationships. Don't be afraid to think differently than how we're given to think when our media is telling us that life is hard and life is miserable and life is messy and life is messed up and we have no future. When those themes are being woven throughout our culture, and when we repeat those themes, we should try and figure out ways to beat what we repeat when we shouldn't be repeating it. All right, TorontoTrueSeekers.com, another great website, another great group to join, 400 members, and the Toronto Street News, homeless paper out there. I leave you with Eminem's Not Afraid, 25 million views on YouTube because we relate to this song. Artists are only making this type of music to make sure we're not afraid of something. Figure out what that is and figure out what they can do at a corporate level to give us the inspiration we need at our plebeian level to take on the corporate powers that be evil. Peace out, everybody.
You said you was king, you lied through your teeth. For that, fuck your feelings. Instead of getting crowned, you're getting capped. And to the fans, I'll never let you down again, I'm back. I promise to never go back on that promise. In fact, let's be honest, at last we laughed. CD was aired, perhaps I ran them accents into the ground. Relax, I ain't going back to that now. Trying to say is get back to clap clap, cause I ain't playing around. It's a game called circling, I don't know how. I'm way too up to back down, but I think I'm still trying to figure this crap out. Thought I had it mapped out, but I guess I didn't. This fucking black cloud still follows me around, but it's time to exercise these demons. These motherfuckers are doing jumping jacks now. Get clean, I did it for me. Admittedly, I probably did it subliminally for you, so I could come back a brand new me. You helped see me through, and don't even realize what you did, cause believe me, you, I've been through the ringer, but they can do little to the middle finger. I think I got a tear in my eye, I feel like the king of my world. Haters can make like bees with no stingers and drop dead. No more beef fingers, no more drama from now on. I promise to focus solely on handling my responsibilities as a father, so I solemnly swear to always treat this group like my daughter. And raise it, you couldn't lift a single single on it. Cause the way I feel, I'm strong enough to go to the club or the corner pub and lift the whole liquor counter up. Cause I'm raising the bar, I shoot for the moon, but I'm too busy gazing at stars. I feel amazing and I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm.